The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
Welcome, everybody. Sports Talk New York is live here at the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, on beautiful Long Island. How are you doing, everybody? My name is Tony Seville. I will be your host for the next hour. We got some great sports talk coming up for you tonight. We have Jets beat writer for the AP, Dennis Wozniak, will be on and he'll discuss pretty much everything the Jets have done since the end of the season. We're going to talk a little bit about free agency. We're going to talk a little bit about the management with Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh and everything that they've done to this point. And with the big draft coming up at the end of April, with a lot of picks and some possible trades, we'll have a little discussion with Dennis about that. And the bottom part of the hour, we're going to be talking with the wildly popular host of Hockey Night in New York, which is a big Islanders podcast. So Sean Cuthbert will be joining me in the bottom half of the hour. We're going to talk all things Islanders. They dropped a game today against the Tampa Bay Lightning at home. It has not been the season I think that everybody has wanted or anybody expected. But hey, we got a lot of New York sports going on right now. It is a big time of year. We got baseball's almost back. The Mets, big day today throughout their number one, number two starters in Jacob DeGrom and Max Scherzer. What a great thing was to see them pitch today. Jacob DeGrom looks like he's just on another level of everybody else. Max Scherzer pitched really well today too, struck out seven through six innings. He's looking like he's ready to go too. So that's a big thing. The Yankees, they looks like they're going to be good again, but they got some talent in that division, so we're going to see what happens there. At the Nets and the Rangers looking at looking to go on a playoff run. A lot of stuff going on. Really a lot of stuff going on. The Jets is going to be our first topic tonight. Look, we all know as Jet fans that this is what we're always looking at this point of the year. We're looking forward to the draft, a high draft pick. It's just, it is what it is, you know, and that's what we have to deal with as Jet fans. I always say that if I get to see this team in a Super Bowl, I don't even think I know what to do with myself. And, you know, I think that we finally have a general manager that is, I think, has a plan and has stuck to it. I think he's done a pretty good job since he's been here. And I think he's had a pretty good free agency period. And there's a couple swings and misses, I think. The Tyreek Hill thing, I think everyone would have liked to see that happen. That was a completely out of left field thing. Amari Cooper. I think Calvin Ridley was really the problem for me, at least, because, you know, I think that was a guy that the Jets really liked, and the fact that they weren't able to go after him, I think that was a problem. You know, that was a thing that if Calvin Ridley was available, I think it would have been a perfect addition to this offense. You know, Kyle Wilson definitely needs a number one receiver. We all know that. He needed some tight ends. We got two of them in free agency, which we'll talk about with Dennis. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with the draft. So we're going to have Dennis on in a few minutes. And then, like I said, we're going to talk some Islanders tonight. The Rangers were, last that I had checked, that they were tied 4-4 with Buffalo. And that is a story that I don't think anyone would have seen coming so quickly. You know, Gerard Gallant came in. I think that was a good move for the Rangers. They needed a coach that needed to come in and kick a little ass, and that's exactly what he did. So, but we're going to go now live with our first guest for tonight, the AP writer for the Jets, longtime beat writer for the Jets, and fellow Islander fan of as myself, Mr. Dennis Wozniak is joining us. Dennis, what's going on, man? How are you?
Tony, how are you, man? You know what? The last couple of games for the Isles, though, not so good.
No, definitely not.
You know? Man, it's tough.
It has been a tough season, and I don't think anybody saw this coming, considering that they were a goal away from the Stanley Cup final last year. I don't think anyone saw this.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you know, with the expectations so high, and then the way the season started with, you know, with all the road games and the COVID, and it got off on a bad foot, you know, and it's kind of, kind of what Jet fans has gone through over the last several years. And if you're a fan of both teams, you've been, you know, I mean, at least you've had some ups with the Isles over the last couple of seasons. So, but when the expectations are so high, it's tough when you don't even get close, you know? I mean, it doesn't look like playoffs this year, for sure.
No, it definitely doesn't. And, you know, with the Jets, there's no expectations going into the season, as we all know. But, I mean, you've been around the team long enough that you understand that, and you deal with it on a daily basis. But let's talk about that a little bit. It has been a wild off season in the NFL. I mean, there have been some unbelievable things that have gone on. And I feel like Joe Douglas is not one of these drunken sailors out there, not just throwing money and, you know, trying to make trades just to do that. It seems like he's a man with a plan. And talk a little bit about, well, you know, your thoughts on the free agency and on free agency and the guys they brought back and then the guys that they brought in.
Yeah, I think you're right on with that. I think what you've seen here over the last couple of seasons is a plan, you know, put in place by Joe Douglas. And a plan that he's sticking to. And a big part of that is not throwing money around, at free agents, at big name free agents. We've seen him bring in building blocks, which aren't the splashiest names. I mean, we saw for years with Mike Tannenbaum when he was the GM, I mean, pretty much any player was a possibility. Mm-hmm. If they can get him here, because he was willing to make that big splash. I think what Joe Douglas has done is what he saw being built in Baltimore and in Philly and that whole process and bringing in the building blocks. And now he's preached patience, and Robert Saleh has also preached patience, and it's because of this. I think they have this plan in their head that they needed to do things. And really, when you see the roster turnover over the last two off seasons, you realize, okay, they really gutted the roster from what it had been before. Now, this truly is Joe Douglas's roster, and this is his vision, and this is what he's trying to win with. And I think with some of the signings that they made, they addressed some big-time issues. I mean, bringing in Lakin Tomlinson to play guard, I mean, this guy, he's established, he's a good player. And it was a 3-year, $40 million deal with $27 million guaranteed, and a lot of that up front. So, you know, and then you look at some of these other deals, CJ, you know, Uzama and Tyler Conklin, 3-year deals, and those, one for $24 million, the other for a little over $20. There's a lot of guaranteed money up front. Mm-hmm. And so they're looking at long-term, being able to, hey, if this doesn't work, we'll be able to be in good, you know, standing financially moving forward. And I think that's always what he's looking at, and just not just throwing the money out the window and win now, because this team is not a win now team.
Correct.
And I think some of these guys here, like I mentioned, the two tight ends, and even bringing in DJ Reed from Seattle, you know, Jordan Whitehead from Tampa, and even a smaller level signing like Jacob Martin, the defensive end, these are guys that are building blocks and potential starters. And now you combine that with the guys they drafted last year, the guys they brought in last year, Carl Lawson, hopefully he's healthy, and he's a guy that they'll rely on big time. Now all of a sudden you have a bunch of players who they can build with and around Zach Wilson and progress with Zach Wilson, where it's not just one and done and they're trying to win right now. So I think that's kind of the plan, and I think that he's really sticking with it, and he's going to really rely on the draft picks from this year and last year's draft class as well.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you brought up three names that I want to touch on, and that's Jordan Whitehead, DJ Reed, and Jacob Martin. These are guys who are starter capable, and I feel like Joe tends to look for value, for guys who maybe are underutilized or guys who are kind of under the radar or maybe blocked by another player on their roster, and looked to bring these guys in. And the stats on Whitehead and Reed especially, are their numbers are tremendous.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think a lot of that is also being in concert with Robert Saleh and kind of knowing, like, hey, this certain guy plays this scheme, Jordan Whitehead or DJ Reed. They fit this scheme and we could bring out everything that we saw that they were able to do in their former, on their former team, like we can really showcase that, and they could showcase that and be not just good players with us, but maybe take it to that next level. And I think you see that with a lot of these signings, like you said, like guys who, you know, are not so much lower level, but not the big names that
right.
they're banking on these guys in 3 years being big names,
mm-hmm.
you know, and being guys that, that help them win next year and the year after that and become stars in their own right because they fit in the scheme. And that's DJ Reed. That's Whitehead. That's the two tight ends on offense, you know, the scheme that Michael Floor is going to run or has been running. You need those two tight ends. And I mean, that's all of these pieces. That's the thing. You have to look at it as pieces. That's how they're building this. They're not the team that is going to have the superstars this year, but there are a lot of guys who have a ton of potential. And it's frustrating, I think, for Jets fans in general, because you've had that time where you've had some big names on this team. Just, you know, 10 years ago, 11 years ago when they made the playoffs, there were a ton of big names on that team, and it's the last time they've been to the playoffs, and now they're trying something new. And this is Joe Douglas really being meticulous and trying to put that plan in place with those type of guys.
Right, right. So Laken Tomlinson obviously is the big signing this year. He's going to be an anchor on that offensive line. Talk a little bit about what he's going to bring. Robert Saleh obviously knows him very well. Talk a little bit about what you feel like he's going to bring to this team.
I think he's one of those guys like you mentioned, a guy who, you know, at another stop, it's like, hey, this guy's an ascending player. You know, this is a guy who made the Pro Bowl last year and could really blossom. I mean, he's 30 years old, but, you know, he's a solid player. And then you put him with those other guys on that line when you're looking at a healthy Mekhi Becton and, you know, Elijah Vera Tucker going into his second year. You know, you have some players on that offensive line now that you think, okay, we'll be okay moving forward with these five guys. You know, Fant is a free agent after next season, you know, but maybe one of these younger guys move into that spot if they don't re-sign Fant. But you know you've got that left side as long as Becton is healthy.
Right.
And by bringing in a guy like Tomlinson who has a ton of experience and has, you know, played a position of need for the Jets. That's so important, especially when you're talking about protecting that quarterback and having guys in front who can set up the run, who can set up the pass and protect the quarterback. And I think he's going to be a really good piece. And again, he's not like an Armstead where, you know, he was the big name, the number one target at that position. But he is a solid piece and exactly the type of piece that the Jets needed to get going into this offseason.
Right, and George Fant was kind of a part of that part. It had
sure.
that basically the same type of player 2 years ago. And now look what he's evolved into an extremely important part of that line, and to a point where Mekhi Becton is not guaranteed to go back on the left side.
Right, exactly. So then when you look at it that way, they have some flexibility now because of that, and they have some guys, and you know, and it's not a done deal that they don't bring Duvernay Tardif back as a backup and have somebody who could play those guard spots if somebody else gets hurt. I think so. Here's the big thing, Tony, about this roster now. When you look at all of the spots, and you're talking like, you know, the offensive line, you're talking the safety spot, you're talking corners, linebackers even. You have a ton of guys now who are now backups but have a ton of experience as starters.
Exactly.
So now if injuries happen and, you know, you don't want that to happen, but you're not just throwing in guys who have no experience or no knowledge of the system like we saw at safety last year where they were signing guys off the street to play, you know, 3 days later on Sunday. You know, now you've got a roster that's got experienced young depth. And that's I mean, that's huge. I think when you look at it from that standpoint, like, wow, you know, that is a big positive, and it's kind of like an under the radar type thing where, you know, you don't need to start certain guys anymore. I mean, look, Bryce Hall and Brandon Echols might not start. You know, both of them might not start. Who knows? You know, and especially with DJ Reed there,
right?
You have these guys who have experience, and that can only strengthen the competition in camp and the depth going into the season.
I agree with you 100%. And you know, I mean, if you, like I said, you look at all of these moves, and it's pretty apparent that Mr. Joe Douglas has got himself a plan, and he is sticking to it. And the one thing I think Jet fans can complain about if they want to, and I think that, you know, it's something that needs to be addressed at one point or another over the course of the next couple of weeks, is that number one wide receiver spot. You know, Corey Davis kind of didn't live up to what I think they were hoping for from him. And, you know, Elijah Moore is definitely on the up. You know, he's got a ton of potential, as we saw. But the Jets, you know, checked in on three different wide receivers this offseason, didn't come away with any of them. Well, one of them, obviously, not their fault, Calvin Ridley. They just, you know, he's under suspension. He's not, which, I mean, personally, I think is ridiculous, but that's just me. But Calvin Ridley is not available. And then they lost, they did not make a deal for Amari Cooper. I understand why, but, and then this Tyreek Hill thing, which came out of left field. I mean, oh my God. I mean, Dennis, tell me, when you found out about this, you had to be, like, on the floor. Because who would have thought that Tyreek Hill and the New York Jets would have been mentioned in the same sentence this offseason?
Right. So here's the deal. So, you know, at the AP, what a lot of us do in our off seasons, like for me, that's now, we work on the editing desk. So, you know, all the sports happen at night. So I was working at night. I wake up, you know, whatever it was, 10 a.m. or whatever, and I see my phone's buzzing a little bit with some of the tweets, like from some of the people, like, oh, Tyreek Hill, you know, was working out a deal and it didn't, for an extension, it didn't work, and he's been, you know, okayed, he's being allowed to explore a deal. Like, oh wow, that's pretty crazy. And then it's just like, you know, you don't even think, like the Jets, like Tyreek Hill, and all of a sudden that one report comes out. And then I'm sure just like all the rest of the people on the beat, you start making your calls, your texts, like, you know, is there something to this? Is that, not knowing that, man, not only was there something to it, that there was something done and ready to roll, and it could have happened if not for the Dolphins kind of swooping in and, you know, just kind of giving into what, you know, Tyreek Hill wanted. He wanted to be a Dolphin. He wanted to be in Miami, and I'm sure part of that was, they use the Jets as leverage and all that, but
I was hoping you weren't going to say that, Dennis.
I mean, but here's the thing. Like, they had a deal. The Jets had a deal. They were ready to go. They were ready to pull. You know, like, okay, boom, boom, boom. They're working things out. And from what I understand, his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, you know, talked about like, hey, you know, we had this deal, and we're notifying teams that, you know, this is going to happen. And I think once that happened, the Dolphins were like, whoa, 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 wait a second, hold on. And that's who he wanted to go to anyway. So, but I think, so it's funny because when I tweeted later on that night, that day, like, hey, you can't blame this one on Joe Douglas because this is like, he offered, the deal was accepted by the Chiefs. It was in Tyreek Hill's hands. You know, people were still upset, you know, about the Jets not getting him, but I think it showed that when push comes to shove and there's a deal that he wants to make, Joe Douglas is in, you know, and this was a huge deal, you know.
And without giving up a first-round pick, I mean, the guy would have been, and they might have put him in the Hall of Fame by the afternoon. I mean, oh, my
exactly,
God.
Exactly, exactly. And that's the other thing, when you see that, and, like, he could have had Tyreek Hill without giving up a first-round pick.
Yeah.
And so it would have had a number one wide receiver and still had the number 4 and 10 picks in the draft. Like, that's sure. Like, the guy is willing to deal, and he's smart.
Yes.
They need to win. That's the thing. Like, if he could put this plan in place and go operate the way he is and then win, then he'll be the best thing for Jets fans since, you know, Rex Ryan first came here.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I agree. And look, I mean, who better to learn from than Ozzie Newsome? I mean, really.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to have a guy who's going to be a disciple of somebody, Ozzie Newsome did it and could, you know, can do it in his sleep, basically, with his eyes closed. I mean, he ran that Baltimore Ravens organization, you know, tremendously over his time. So to see,
yeah,
you know, somebody come from that school and come, you know, like I said, like we've been talking about, with a plan and executing it. And basically, look, and like you said, this was a big time player. It was a big time offer. They were going to make a big time salary offer to this guy and commitment to him. And he's not afraid to take a swing when he has to take a swing, when it's a guy who he feels is going to be the right guy for this team. And I don't think you can ask for much more than that.
Right. And the deal, like I said, the deal was done. It wasn't that, oh, they didn't offer enough. No, the Chiefs okayed the deal. The
right.
Chiefs were ready to go. They were ready to make that deal with the Jets. And, you know, it was Hill saying, man, you know, I want to be in Miami. So
yeah,
now the Jets get to face them twice a year. But,
oh,
you know, hey.
I don't even want to think about that either.
So they need corners. They need the cornerback.
Well, you just segued in. You know, I was going to say, you just segue right into my next point, and that's the draft. The Jets have a opportunity to really hit a home run here, okay? They have 5 picks in the top 70. They have 2 picks in the top 10. This is a golden opportunity for this team to take a major step forward, and I think that Joe's draft last year was tremendous. Taking Kyle Wilson, getting Elijah Vera Tucker, walking away with Elijah Moore, taking Michael Carter. Like, they were just some really, really smart picks along the way. There's been a lot of talk about that 4th pick. I think that top 5 in the mock drafts has changed about 700 times in the course of the last 3 weeks. Aiden Hutchinson was going first, then he was going second, then he was going third, then he was going back to first. It's crazy how these things change on a daily basis. So the Jets choose 4 and 10. And some names that have been bandied about have been Ahmad Gardner, Kayvon Thibodeau, right? Who is the out of Oregon, who's an edge guy. Which, I mean, if you put this kid on the other side of Carl Lawson, this could be dangerous. But now there's even talk that he's not even going to make it to 4. So you know, what are you hearing about this?
So I think it's so intriguing, this draft, because we don't really know for sure. You know, like you said, you know, Aiden Hutchinson is like, oh yeah, you know, Jacksonville take him and that'll be it. Like, well, I mean, you know, will they, you know, who's going to take him? Is Detroit going to take him? Like, who's, like, you don't know how this is going to shake out, because it's just, in years past, it was clear cut because you knew certain teams that were at the top needed quarterbacks. And the quarterbacks were going, and, you know, that's not the case this year. And so many of those teams up at the top, including the Jets, need so many different things. And like you mentioned, you know, the edge rusher, the cornerback, and the Jets need a wide receiver. And,
right,
and here's the other thing. Who needs an offensive lineman? There are two guys up there, Ekwonu and
Evan
Neal from Alabama,
mm-hmm,
who are really highly touted offensive tackles. So I just think the Jets are in a great position, because they will solidify a weakness no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
If they go, I don't think they're going to go safety. I just don't think they're going to take Kyle Hamilton at 4. You know,
I've seen Hamilton.
Still there?
I've seen Hamilton anywhere from 2 to 12.
Yeah, and that's the thing. But they need a corner. And, like, this goes back to what I was saying. If you just say they get Gardner out of Cincinnati, mm-hmm, and you have DJ Reed, now you have those two guys, plus Michael Carter the second as your slot guy.
Right.
And then you have Bryce Hall and Brandon Echols, who were starters last year, as your backups.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a pretty good squad right there of cornerbacks.
It completely transforms it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then you look at the defensive ends, and you know, if Hutchinson or Thibodeau aren't there, you know, Trayvon Walker out of Georgia, is he a guy? And you've got to pair him with Carl Lawson. And Jacob Martin is also, you know, one of those guys that's going to rotate in there too, off
mm-hmm
the edge. So I think, you know, they need a wide receiver. I think they need one from one of those spots. And Garrett Wilson from Ohio State. I see Drake London out of USC be one of those guys. So I think there's so many options, and they're, like I said, they're going to fill one of those needs. So I could see them keeping the 4 and trading the 10 and, you know, trying to get more picks and maybe a second rounder and hit on, you know, somebody there. But there are so many potential home run picks there for the Jets at 4 that, you know, it's really, it, I mean, we still have, you know, three weeks or four weeks now before the draft. So that could change a ton. And we see that every year, how that all of a sudden guys rise and fall and all that. But I think those are the guys to look at. You know, Ahmad Gardner, the cornerback, Garrett Wilson, Trayvon Walker, Thibodeau, all of those guys are in play for those two picks in the top 10 for the Jets.
Yep. What about trades? Like, you know, we just mentioned
about
for that
second
pick.
I mean, can see that. Totally, yeah. Especially, I feel like I don't see them trading out of 4. I could see them dealing the 10. But then what happens if all of a sudden a guy like A.J. Brown becomes available? Like, he actually becomes available.
That's what I meant. That's exactly what I meant. Like, could you see them making a trade? Can you trading one of these picks or multiple of these picks for a player? Because they almost did it with Tyreek Hill, so
yeah,
is that a possibility as well?
Yeah, but, you know, I know people are saying, like, hey, well, the Jets had that deal there, and they wouldn't have had to give up a first-round pick, and now you're talking A.J. Brown. They'll have to give up the number 4 or number 10 pick. Well, I mean, it's the cost of doing business at that point.
Correct.
You know, I mean, Tyreek Hill wanted out, and, you know, maybe A.J. Brown does too, but it doesn't sound like the Titans really want to entertain that kind of stuff. But, you know, who knows? I mean, when the draft gets closer, when these picks start flying around, you never know. So I could see, you know, maybe that number 10 pick, the Jets deal in a package to get somebody like that. So, yeah, I would not put it past Joe Douglas to deal one of those draft picks for an established player, especially if they want the defensive end or the cornerback at number 4, and they still get a number 1 wide receiver by using that 10 pick to get him.
Right. I agree. Well, Dennis, going to wrap this segment up with one last thing. I know you are a huge metal and rock fan, as am I. And we have a lot of these things done between the Jets, the Islanders, the music. Like, we should hang out, bro.
Yeah, man.
But we had a bit of sad news the other day with the passing of Foo Fighters' Taylor Hawkins, and tremendous talent. You know, one of my favorite bands. Got to see him live at Citi Field. But just, you know, your few thoughts on Taylor Hawkins and the tragedy.
It's one of those that, you know, as a big music guy, you know, you hear things all the time, you know, bands lose members and that kind of thing. But the difference, I think, in this case was Taylor Hawkins was such a significant part of what the Foo Fighters are, you know, and the way he and Dave Grohl have such a, like, synergy. And it's so crazy. I tweeted this out. I had just finished Grohl's book on Wednesday, you know, I had been reading all this stuff, and it was a great book, by the way, for any fans who haven't, like, checked it out, just kind of how this all came to be. But the way he spoke about Taylor Hawkins and how they were like twin flames, you know, creatively, and he's a brother from another mother and a guy, you know, that he couldn't imagine, you know, not being with. And now he's going to have to deal with that. And I wonder how the whole band deals with Taylor Hawkins not being there. It's got to be rough, and especially from Dave's standpoint, how it was such a tough thing for him to overcome when Kurt Cobain died.
Right.
How does this, I mean, this is his best friend for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now knowing he's not going to be behind him on stage anymore, you know, how does he deal with that? Do they move forward to honor him, or do they maybe repurpose the band, or like repackage, so to speak, as something else to kind of move on? There's so many questions there. And that's the thing that stinks, you know, because, you know, the band, they loved each other. You could see it. And he had so much of an influence on all these other drummers and musicians around the world. If you saw Twitter, now, how do they move forward from that? And when, you know, it's going to take a while, I think. And So it's tough. That's definitely a tough loss. It's something like I don't feel like I've felt since Wayne Staley died. You know, Alice in Chains lead singer. Can they go on like this? Will they ever be the same? You know, so I think that's a valid question for the Foo Fighters at this point.
Yeah, I know, man. They're such a great band. It's such a great band to see live. They've been pumping out these hits and these iconic songs for so long, and you know, to see, you know, in my opinion, other than Dave Grohl, the most important part of that band, Taylor Hawkins,
yeah,
you know, die so tragically and suddenly. It's tough. And it was the day after they announced that they were going to be playing live at the Grammys too, which is, you know,
right,
so they had
exactly
stuff on their plate, and it's a shame, man.
Yeah, man.
So, but Dennis, listen, man, thank you so much, for all your time tonight. This was a great talk, and, I'm sure we'll be speaking as, you know, the Jets make, their picks in the draft and, you know, hopefully get AJ Brown for like a sixth and a seventh rounder like everyone expects.
There you go.
Thanks so much, Dennis. I'll talk to you down the line, brother.
You got it, Tony. Anytime, man.
Appreciate it. Talk to you soon. We're going
to
go to break, and when we come back, we're going to have Sean Cuthbert of Hockey Night in New York, Sports Talk New York on WGBE.
Listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB. Broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM. Or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Talk New York. What's going on, everybody? We are on until 9 o'clock. We just wrapped up with Dennis Wozniak from the AP. What a great segment on the New York Jets. And little talk about Taylor Hawkins and the Foo Fighters, which, you know, we'd rather not be talking about that. But unfortunately, you know, this stuff happens. We've lost some really unbelievably music talents over the course of my lifetime. And, you know, Taylor Hawkins is right up there at the top. So it is, it's terrible. So, but, we're going to move on now and talk some New York Islanders hockey. We have the co-host and producer of the wildly popular Hockey Night in New York, which I may or may not have a little bit of intimate knowledge with, but we have Sean Cuthbert on the line. Shawnee, what's up?
Tony Stabile, how does it feel, pal? How you been?
Oh, how are you?
How are you? Nice to be here, buddy. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely, bro. Absolutely. Listen, we're going to talk Isles hockey. Who should I talk to? Who came to mind first? You. And here we are.
Let's do it, buddy. Let's do it.
All right. Well, as I was talking with Dennis Wozniak, he is the beat writer for the Jets. I know that's a sport you don't really, you know, like to watch or anything like that, but he's a huge Islander fan. And we spent the first few minutes talking about Isles hockey and just about the overall disappointment of this season. It just wasn't in the cards for this team. There's a bunch of different reasons about why that happened. Why don't you go and give me your thoughts on what exactly went wrong here?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's you got to chalk it up to a lost season, and like you said, there's a lot of things that factored into that. Obviously, everybody's spoken about the 13 game road trip to start it off, waiting for UBS to be built. They find a road trip, and you think that things are getting back to normal, and then all of a sudden they get hit with a COVID outbreak. They basically end up fielding the Bridgeport Islanders there for a little while. They lose some tough games to some, you know, big competitors in the Metro Division and whatnot, and that ends up happening again. So they just kind of couldn't get their feet under them even after that road trip. And look, I mean, even when you have an 82-game season, you know, you start off the season that way. Even if you're the team that came out of the Final Four last year, that's a big hill to climb. And they lost some personnel, whether it was by way of cap management or what have you, but you know, maybe they didn't bring in the same horses or the right horses to replace the guys that they lost. Talking about guys like Jordan Eberle, talking about guys like Mick Letty having to get dealt, and, you know, they brought in Zdeno Chara. It's a good story, obviously the nostalgia, but the guys, you know, he's not a young buck anymore. He's not the same guy that he was, and Kyle Palmieri took half the season to start scoring goals. So you look at all that, and it snowballed, and they just, they're starting to play a lot better now, but unfortunately too little too late.
Yeah. I mean, you have to think that there are some guys that after the whole COVID outbreak thing, and I would think like 90% of the team ended up having it at one point or another. It definitely had an effect on some guys, because you see Anders Lee now, and Anders Lee is just, you know, out of his mind right now, scoring goals, setting up goals. He's all around the net. He's playing really well. And for a long time, and I believe he spoke about this early on, he said it took him a long time to kind of get back into a groove after having COVID. So I wonder if other guys were having the same issue. Because, look, you know as well as I do, hockey players, they don't complain. You know, you find out at the end of the season that a guy was playing with like a broken heel for 2 weeks, you know, and you never even knew there was anything wrong with him. So,
right.
I mean, obviously we should chalk some of that up to the fact that they were the guinea pig for the COVID system this season for the NHL. And they didn't, you know, then all of a sudden they start canceling games where they were making the Islanders field, you know, 9 or 10 guys from the minor leagues that were called up that afternoon.
Yeah, they had to share that guinea pig status with the Ottawa Senators. I believe the San Jose Sharks also had an early COVID outbreak, and the league was being a little, I guess for a lack of better words, stubborn at the time. They wanted to get these games in. Maybe they held out some hope that this is a blip in the radar and things would get better over the season. Obviously, things got even worse. Like you said, even more teams ended up having outbreaks, but they couldn't really justify playing the games anymore. So yeah, they were certainly a victim of that. And you know, you hate to make excuses, but these are just things that happen. It's reality. And, you know, should they have been a better team that could have bounced back from that? You can make an argument. You look at what they did over the last couple of years. But I really think when you combine those unfortunate circumstances from the beginning of the year and maybe just with the guys that they ended up having in place this year, it just wasn't enough. And you know, if you try to look at this long term, you look ahead to next year, I mean, look, obviously you want to get back in the dance, you want another shot at the cup, but maybe this kind of gives the coaching staff and Lou Lamoriello at the helm there as the general manager to really get a good look at what they really need to adjust and fix for next season. And you know, I think this is going to be a very critical summer for the New York Islanders after what's happened this year, and they're going to get a good look over these last 20 or so games to see, I guess, who are the pretenders and the contenders, if you will. And I think Lou's going to be busy this summer, and they'll be back in the mix next year.
I would agree with you 100% on that. I want to go over some bright spots and some disappointments, but unfortunately, since the disappointments outweigh the bright spots, let's go start there, okay? So I think that'll be a good place to go. I have a few thoughts on this. You just touched on one of them, and that was Lou's plan to go with Andy Green and Zdeno Chara after trading Nick Letty. I think the Zdeno Chara thing would have been great if you weren't employing Andy Green at the same time. So by giving up Letty and just essentially replacing him with Chara, that was definitely a step back. I know a lot of us thought that we were going to get the same Chara that the Washington Capitals had gotten early on in the season last year, which we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But your thoughts on Lou's plan. And look, and Lou will be the first one to tell you that, you know, you go into these things and you think you have a plan and it just, you know, it doesn't work out. And that's exactly what happened here. But your thoughts on his plan for Andy Green and Chara to replace Nick Letty?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Tony. I don't think that was his plan. I think that was plan C or plan Z, if you want to be cheeky. I don't think Zdeno Chara was the first guy on Lou's list to replace Nick Letty.
I would agree with that.
He had some lines in the water to look at some other guys to bring in that maybe he swung and missed on. Or, you know, he had a town hall actually today before the game that I happened to be there for. And, you know, he talked about the fact that, you know, it takes two to tango. And I'm sure he was working the phones and he was trying to find somebody, you know, some other player that he could bring in to replace Nick Letty that, you know, was maybe just more adept at that left side position, right? I mean, look, nobody, as much as Zdeno Chara has accomplished in this league, and Andy Green to a lesser degree, we all know how old these guys are. We all know they're not the same players. There's no way that Lou Lamoriello, after dealing Nicoletti, said Zdeno Chara is going to be the guy to replace him. You know, the points, the puck movement, the speed that Nicoletti had. There's no way Lou went into to this summer after making that deal saying this is what I'm going to do. So obviously things didn't work out the way he wanted to. He brings in Zdeno Chara. Maybe he planned on bringing him anyway, but to, like you were saying, in a lesser role. Maybe he wanted him to be more of a, you know, bottom pairing, you know, guy, maybe even a seventh defenseman. Who knows? But he kind of ended up bringing him in for a regular spot because I think Lou just ran out of options.
Yeah, that's certainly possible. I mean, you know, it's not, again, what you want to hear from a team that was one goal away from going to the Stanley Cup. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is at this point, I guess. And, you know, the salary cap has definitely hamstrung the Islanders to a certain degree. And, you know, I mean, they've had to give up some guys that they probably didn't want to over the years. Another guy is Colorado and Devon Taves. And it's, he's a guy that they developed. And look, when Devon Taves was traded, I mean, everyone looks at the numbers he put up this year. But Devon Taves was coming off a playoff series where, you know, a playoff run where he didn't play very well. You know, he was the third guy. He was, he made, some critical errors during that run. And I think that Lou looked at the opportunity and said, okay, this is a good deal, and let's get some salary off the books because we're not going to be able to keep everybody. And he was the guy to go.
Well, not only that, Tony, you have to remember, that was the first off season where the flat cap happened.
Correct. Correct.
So Lou and the rest of the league wasn't even expecting to go into that off season with no extra room in the cap. So his hand was forced.
Right.
I have no doubt that his intention was not to trade Devon Taves.
Oh, but
when he looked at the cap situation, mm-hmm. he had to get, salary out somewhere, and that was the best way he was able to do it, unfortunately.
Right. I mean, but what I was saying was the four guys on that top four was Pulak, Pelech, Mayfield, and Devon Taves. And Taves was the guy who they, I guess, felt that they could move on with, and they'd feel, the least amount of damage. Of course,
right.
Now when you have two older guys on the back end and you need to bring in a younger player, you look at a guy like Taves and the year that he's having, 40, 50 points or whatnot in Colorado, and you're like, well, this was our guy, and we basically gave him away. But there were a lot of circumstances that led up to that decision.
For sure.
All right, so another guy who I feel has been a bit of a disappointment this year is Matthew Barzal. And it's not that I feel that Barzal has played poorly. I feel that there could, for a guy who is considered a superstar in this league, guy who's making, $7 million a year, which is, which is a hefty salary when it comes to the NHL. And, you look at his production at 40 some odd points in the almost 60 games that he's played. And some nights you're, I guess kind of scratching your head, like, should we be getting more out of Matthew Barzal, who is, generally considered a superstar type of player? Your thoughts on his season so far?
It's a good question. I mean, he's got 42 points through 55 games. Maybe you want to see him in more of a point-per-game clip. And, look, he lost his line mate for a few years in Jordan Eberle. He was one of those guys that helped put up points. They tried the Kyle Palmieri experiment on his wing. It didn't work out that great. And I would say things are looking more interesting now that he's been playing with Oliver Wahlstrom. He's finally getting some time to see if there's some chemistry there, and maybe Wahlstrom's a guy who can, step into that role going forward. But I think it's tough. It's like chicken or the egg sort of thing. Like, is Matt Barzal the kind of superstar that makes the players around him better, or is he the kind of star that needs those complementary pieces that can help bring out the best in him too? We know he's a
right.
dish man. We know he's a guy that gets a lot of assists. He's very creative with the puck. Is it his fault that he didn't have guys finishing, or is it because he didn't have the right guys on his side, that wasn't helping him put up the points that, he normally would? It's tough to say. I think, just objectively speaking, it's definitely a down year for him.
Mm-hmm.
But, maybe if Lou Lamoriello brings in a guy like Philip Forsberg, if you want to dream high, or even just another top six caliber player that can complement him well, I suppose like Jordan Eberle did, maybe he gets back to where he needs to be.
Well, we hope so, because this team is not going to go anywhere without him producing at a high level, and
right.
He really hasn't done that this year. And the last bit of a disappointment is I think everybody was hoping after last year's playoff run that Anthony Beauvillier would hit that, you know, that stride of consistency, mm-hmm. you know, not going 15, 17 games without a goal. You know, I think that we're all just waiting because the kid works so hard and he's so talented. And it just he just goes through these ruts where he just can't score. He should be a 25-goal scorer every year, night in and night out, you know, year in and year out. And, you know, what does he have? Did he hit 10 or 11 goals at this point? I'm not even sure he's to that point yet. And
yeah, he's at exactly 10 goals.
Okay. So, and I think that was, he got the 10th one, not today, what, on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. So, he's a guy who you just want to see more consistency out of. He's such a likable kid. He's clutch in the playoffs. He's shown that, scored that huge goal to send it to game 7 in overtime. He's a tremendous player. He can be a tremendous player, but he lacks consistency. And is that something that you feel that, you know, when Lou mentioned after the trade deadline, you know, they're going to be looking to make hockey trades, is that something that, you know, maybe it's a change of scenery thing for him?
He's an interesting case, and, you know, being a follower of the Islanders as long as I have, it's kind of reminiscent of some other guys. You look at Josh Bailey. He took a long time to hit his stride. You look at Brock Nelson, who I would say is now the most consistent player on the New York Islanders.
100%.
He used to be a guy exactly in Beauvillier's position. I mean, everybody used to call him Brocktober, right? Because he'd score a bunch of goals in the first month of the season, then he'd disappear for the next two, and maybe he'd show up later on.
Right.
And, you know, Barry Trotz came in, I'm sure this has a lot to do with it, and then he hit his stride. He's been a very consistent player ever since that coaching change happened.
Agreed.
Now you look at Anthony Beauvillier, and he's obviously been under Barry Trotz now for the last couple of years. Does he need a change of scenery? Perhaps. Does it just mean that he needs a little extra time? Because, look, you know it's not an exact science, right? Some guys, they come into the league, they click right away as a first-round draft pick, and they play great. Other guys, it takes more time. It takes extra years, and it's always a little more difficult, especially being somebody who's not in the locker room, right? Somebody who's not a part of the coaching staff, to put your finger on exactly why that is. But when you talk about potential hockey trades going forward, I mean, the truth is, Tony, they don't have too many guys that they can really put on the table that have some kind of trade value that's going to make sense. And he's one of those guys. He still has, you know, as inconsistent as he's been, he still has promise. He still has upside. You have guys like him. Josh Bailey might be a guy that Lou could maybe dangle to a team that's looking for a veteran, that's looking for a guy who can help us in the playoffs. He's also a playoff performer. Obviously, Varlamov is another guy who they held on to in the deadline because I think they want him to stay with Sorokin. But, you know, as far as these hockey trades go, there's not a lot of options, and I think Beauvillier might be the first one. He might be the top option there.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing, pal. Two big bright spots. I think the only two that you really can talk about is the development and the solidification of Ilya Sorokin as the Islanders' number one goaltender. I mean, I think he's been tremendous, especially this last run over the course of the last, you know, month or so. But, I mean, this kid is really starting to show that he is going to be a top number one goalie in his league. What are your thoughts?
No, I'm with you 100%. I think his rise to fame, if you will, came a little sooner than I thought. I thought that this would have been another 50-50 split, and I'm sure that Varlamov being hurt in the beginning of the season and even having his own little bout with COVID earlier on might have had something to do with it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Sorokin took advantage of that. And to his credit, I mean, he really has become the number one goaltender for this team. And you know what? He's one of those guys who has lived up to the hype. You know, you get a name out there, you get a player, maybe, you know, you drafted, and obviously it took a little longer than everybody wanted for him to come over here, but he really has become, I would say, exactly what the hype was. You know, he's one of the best, he's the best goaltender in the world that's not in the NHL. He finally comes over. He's, you know, under the tutelage of the great goaltending coaching staff that the Islanders have. He's got his buddy there in Varlamov. They bring him along a little slowly. And he really got his chance to break out this year. He's been phenomenal. He's their goalie of the future. He's their goalie of the present. And keeping Varlamov, they have one of the best goaltending tandems in the league.
I agree. I agree. I think that, you know, the last 2 years have shown that, and, you know, seeing him take this step forward. I mean, look, we saw it last year in the playoffs when he played wonderful in the series against Pittsburgh. I think Varlamov was really banged up, and he played great. And then Barry Trotz being, you know, the coach with the moxie that can just turn around and be like, okay, you know what? Sorokin did really good in the first round. We're going to switch to Varlamov now. And he's going to take over. And, I mean, what coach can just do that so effortlessly? I don't care what anybody says. I'm just going to take out the guy who just won me the first round, and now we're going to go with a different goalie in the second round. I mean, it's tremendous. And to see the two of them together, their relationship is definitely a good thing. And this is the hill I choose to die on, that the reason why Varlamov was brought here was that he knew they wanted him to be the guy for Ilya Sorokin, and it's worked out perfectly in my
opinion. With that being said, Tony, let me ask you a question. Yeah. Are you glad that they kept Varlamov at the deadline, or are you of the camp that thinks that they should have got whatever they could for him in a market that was very in high demand of a starting caliber goaltender?
I think he has like half the league, if I'm not mistaken, a 16 team no trade. Their hands were probably tied with that. Mm-hmm. And I can understand not moving him. You know, Lou, he's not going to just make a move to make a move. So sure. I think if there was a move to be made, you could tell me all you want that you wanted to see the two of them the rest of the season. I think that's nonsense. They're going to say that because they kept him. But I really, honestly, they could have got by. You know, they have an up-and-coming goalie in Bridgeport and Jacob Skarrick that I'm assuming at some point they'd like to get a look at it, you know, in at least one game. So, I mean, that's a possibility. And you might now, because Sorokin has got some type of upper body thing going on. So,
right.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that this team falls apart if Varlamov is moved in the offseason, but, I think that him being around is not negative at all because of his direct relationship with Ilya Sorokin and how well the two of them get along together.
Sure.
Other bright spot I just want to go over real quick is the development of Noah Dobson into a absolute beast on the power play. My God, this kid just seems to get a power play assist every time he's on the ice.
Yeah, we talked about it on Hockey Night in New York actually in the last couple of weeks, and since the end of January, he's been an absolute monster. Beast is definitely the right word to use. He was basically playing at almost a point-per-game clip since, I think it was the January 26th game. I don't know, back when I looked at it. But either way, he's finally found his groove. And whether you want to credit Barry Trotz, you want to credit Liam Lambert, you want to credit Zdeno Chara for being his partner all year, it's finally clicked. And this is another one of those prospects for the Islanders that is living up to the hype. He was very highly touted going into his draft. There was a lot of celebration behind the Islanders drafting both him and Wahlstrom back to back. And you know what? Even though he's a right side guy as opposed to left like Devontaeves, he might help you maybe not forget about Devontaeves, but at least ease the blow a little bit here, where now all of a sudden you're looking at another core defenseman that you can add to Pulock, Pelech, and even Mayfield. Now, Mayfield is obviously another right-handed D. You have Pulock up there with Pelech, so he's an ideal third pairing, especially on the contract that he has. But it does, you know, maybe relax you a little bit, because now if you can get an 82-game season like this out of Dobson, you know, it took maybe half a year to see it this year, but that makes things a little bit easier, you know, looking at the D and Lou maybe a little more comfortable when he's trying to find a lefty or two to maybe replace the aging guys like you mentioned in Chara and Green. But Dobson's been phenomenal, and he might supplant Ryan Pulock as the top right-handed D on this team.
I think you're right. I think he might have done it already.
He has
definitely been a revelation back there, especially recently. But hopefully, listen, if this whole Zdeno Chara thing ends up anything positive comes out of it, if it is the development of Noah Dobson into a top offensive defenseman in the league, then this whole season would have been worth it, because this kid is really been something.
No question.
Okay, I want to talk to you really quick about UBS, which I have been to twice in the last couple of weeks. I went to the Anaheim game, which was not a sellout, but I got a little bit of a view into the complaints that I saw online early on in the season about, you know, parking and, you know, access and things of that nature. But then last night I was there for a non-hockey event for Sebastian Maniscalco, and I can tell you that it was a complete disaster. Oh my God, bro. I mean, he was on for an hour and a half. It took me longer to go from North Belmore to Elmont to get into the parking lot, get to the arena to see him. It was really unbelievable. And just some of the things I saw, people, and it wasn't just me. I'm just not being picky. People were rolling down their window and asking the parking attendants, is this like this every night? Because this is unbelievable. So, just want to hear your thoughts. You're there, obviously, more than I've been there, but just your thoughts on what has happened, if you're seeing improvement or so on and so forth.
I have now I wasn't there last night, but I have definitely seen improvement. I think the beginning of the year, things were a little rougher as far as the parking goes. I don't think they were as organized. I think there was delays in the shuttles going back and forth. And I don't typically do the shuttle thing, based on the lot that I park in, but I did park in the Emerald lot today and did the shuttle thing, and they were running smoothly. You hop on, you're on your way, no problem. So as long as you don't mind waiting a minute or two to hop on a shuttle to get from that lot to the arena, really not that bad. Now that the weather's gotten better, the walk from either there or the south lot is definitely a lot more bearable. It's a different story when it's 20 degrees, that's for sure. But, And there's still changes to come. So basically the south lot right now is temporary. They're building that parking garage, which I believe the hope is that it's going to be done before the end of the year. So maybe we get a taste of that, maybe an update on this whole parking situation before it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Because the south lot is going to become the retail village. So next year the south lot is gone.
Right.
But is it ideal? No, it's not. It's Nassau Coliseum, very easy. You go, you park. And
the only thing that was easy about Nassau Coliseum was the parking.
Right. But and you know, and in fairness, you know, if you're looking to leave the game at the Coliseum right away, you're sitting in traffic waiting for the cars to get out of the way.
Right.
And it's probably like that at most arenas in the league. And the same thing with UBS. If you're looking to hightail it out of there as soon as you're done, you're going to be sitting in a lot waiting to get out of there. And I think, you know, things like Belmont Hall help to alleviate that. Now, obviously, it's not for everybody. People got to work. People got to get home. But it's a place where you can go. You can hang out. You can have a bite. You can have a drink. You can have a laugh, whatever it is. Maybe wait the traffic out a little bit, and then you can leave. Look, it's not ideal. And look, you have they still have to finish that train station. And when that's done, heading in both directions, you got to figure that's less people taking their cars. And maybe that takes a little bit of the traffic away leaving. And, you know, look, we still have to see how this thing evolves, but it's not ideal. It was pretty bad in the beginning. As far as what I've seen, it's gotten better. And I imagine as, you know, these things are kind of worked out, the station, everything like that, it'll probably improve as well. Will it ever be perfect? Probably not. But, you know, these are the small little things you might just have to deal with to get to the brand new arena that this franchise was desperate for decades.
That we waited for since I was in high school, yes.
Right.
Just to wrap it up here, thanks so much, Shawnee. I really appreciate you coming on. You got a couple of live events coming up for Hockey Night in New York. Just tell us about them real quick, and so we know where to go and find you.
Yes, thank you very much. So this coming Friday, Islanders versus Rangers, RJ Daniels in Rockville Center. We're going to have a viewing party that night. We're going to be raising money for Pat LaFontaine's Foundation, Companions in Courage. So we definitely encourage you guys to come down and have some fun. Isles Rangers, we're going to have a pregame show at 6 o'clock that night. And then Tuesday, April 26th, their last road game against the Tampa Bay Lightning, we will be at the Marriott by the Coliseum. Once again, viewing party, pregame show. Please come down. It's a lot of fun. Isles Fanatics, Drive for Five are going to be there. So a lot of great people. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thank you, Shawnee. I will be there that night also with you. So I look forward to it. I'm going to wrap this up tonight. My time is done. I will be back with you next month. Thanks for coming in and watching and listening to Sports Talk New York.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
This is WGBB AM 1240 and W240 DFFM 95.9 Freeport, New York.